Welcome to LOA Today.
I'm Walt Thiessen.
With me are life coaches Monique Scott and Cindy Chavez. This is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today.
And especially happy that the StreamYard is actually working better for me,
right,
which is a good thing. Like, you know, I can actually see the video before it was all choppy. Like, this is improvement. This is good stuff. So I'm liking that. So hi everybody. We did miss yesterday. I was actually celebrating a birthday and Dean just, you know, well, couldn't make it. So we figured, well, we'll just blow that one off, but we're back. We're having a good time today. And, I gotta tell you, ladies, I think I told you before we got started, this has been crazy for me today. And you know what the craziest part is? We gave the crew the day off today because it's raining around here.
Oh. And it was still crazy, huh?
Because I had so much to catch up on. That's what happens in the spring when you run a gardening business. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, I processed like 14 payments and I'm doing all this scheduling and so forth. And oh, by the way, get some lunch, things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's all good. It's all good. So how are you guys doing?
Great.
Doing good.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to be doing even better in a moment. Because we got some emails about the experiments that we've been doing here on the Wednesday show. So wanted to share those with you. I'm going to pull this over here so I can read it. First one's from Barbie. She says, regarding the E-squared E-cubed experiment, I manifested a free new high-end quality pickleball paddle within 24 hours. And she gets a poop after that one. Going bigger with the next manifestation, she says she's going to push the edge plus like Dan Mangana teaches. So congratulations, Barbie. That's fabulous.
Yeah.
And we got Deborah. Now, Deborah often writes very extensive emails, give us lots of detail, and I love that. She actually sent us two because, you know, we've had a couple weeks here where we were just kind of in between having all three of us on the show at the same time. So these basically come from two different episodes, but it's the same topic because we're doing experiments. So I figured I would, you know, include them both here when I'm reading these emails. So the first one, she says, I just love this experiment. And she thanks her lovely friend Anne-Marie for drawing her attention to it.
Aww.
She says she's constantly looking for these things during the day. It really makes you focus on, and in so doing, manifest what you're looking for in one wonderful cycle, which is a great point.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a snippet of my last 48 hours to add to the mix. This is where, this is the experiment that we did where we were all going to be looking for good things happening. Remember,
we're
going to pay attention for 48 hours. So this is what she came up with. She said, kindness. She says, in my partner towards his new coworkers, making them feel accepted and comfortable. In his looking for special treats, he knows will bring me joy when he's doing the shopping.
I love it.
In the training the staff going out of their way, in the train staff going out of their way to help her on her train journey the other day. So she took a train journey and they had help.
Okay.
Good. And then with abundance, she had an abundance of hot water for a delicious bath, an abundance of time for a midday nap, of joy in her morning run, of the glorious sunshine, of love for her dog, of love for her partner, of love for her friends, of love for herself, and of love for it all.
I love that.
What a vibe lifter, just hearing that string of gratitude. Yeah. Like, feels so good. That's awesome.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
And then she focused on beauty. And what she said there was the sunlight playing on the trees in the woods, of seeing deer grazing at sunrise, of Otto the dog. Well, he's just so beautiful. And the birds serenading us at dawn, alerting us to all the new possibilities for creating yet more joy from this fresh new day. In the sunset, in the night sky, in everything that surrounds me when I look for it. She says, I see the power in setting my intentions to look for and receive the kindness, abundance, and beauty. Thank you for this wonderful experiment. Wouldn't it be wonderful if it spread globally? Maybe if we all set that as our intention, then sit back and see what happens.
Deep
appreciation and love as ever, Deborah.
I love it.
All right.
And that was just the first one. There's a second email.
Yes. Okay. Let's hear it.
So she says, I'm so excited about this one, making my experiment doubly accountable by sharing it here with you. So by 11:47 Saturday morning, I had received a significant and totally unexpected gift. Can't wait to see what it is. I love that this is a book by Pam Grout, as it sort of brings my self-discovery journey in a complete circle, as it was in May of 2017 that I bought and downloaded the Hay House Summit. Pam Grout was one of the teachers that really stood out for me and got me so curious about the power of gratitude. So I started practicing, and it's led me on a wonderful path, of which LOA today is, of course, a very important and significant part. Woohoo! Thank you. She says, I did share my experiment 2 results with you by email. Hope you got that one. And yes, I think that's what she was referring to, was the appreciation one. And as soon as I press, and I shall, I shall start looking for the universe to surprise and delight me with my unexpected gift. Thank you for a great episode. I thought Pam's writing was hilarious. Yeah, I agree with you.
Definitely.
So again, with as much appreciation and love as ever, Deborah. So. Nice emails from listeners. Thank you very much, guys, for sending those in. And I got to tell you, let's see, which one of you was here last week and which one wasn't? I don't remember.
I was here with Jackie.
You were here with Jackie. That's right.
I wasn't here last week.
Monique couldn't make it. Right. That's right. Now I remember now. Right. And Jackie was great. I mean, if you didn't get a chance to hear that one, Monique, you got to play that one back.
Okay.
Jackie was just phenomenal. You especially will appreciate that one.
Right. But, I was so sad that Monique couldn't make it, because Monique talks so often about, really stepping into a role of the person that you are next, right? And that's what Jackie, that's her business. She was an actress for many years. So she was teaching us, she said, ever since I got into LOA, I always hear people say act as if, but they never told us how.
Right.
And I know how, because I'm an actress. So she built her whole coaching business around this idea. And she had so many great tips for us. Like, as a matter of fact, Jackie's like one of my best friends, and I talk to her every week. And we talk about this stuff all the time. And she was bringing up stuff we've never talked. I was like, wait a minute, we've never talked about this. Really good stuff. So if you didn't hear that episode, I think you would love it.
Okay, Walt, is it already on the YouTube channel?
Yo, it's on YouTube. It's on the podcast stream. You can find it both places. So yeah, it's all there. It's ready.
Okay, because I'd like to see it.
Yeah, sure. Well, definitely watch it on YouTube. Well, you could also see it on Facebook too. It's on the Facebook LOA.
Okay,
so you can find it both places.
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited.
That's the beauty of StreamYard. We're streaming all over the place. It's wonderful.
We are everywhere.
We're everywhere. How about that?
I didn't tell you. I don't think I told you about the week that we decided to have the experiment of like seeing beauty and abundance.
That's true.
Everywhere.
No. Well, we were so entranced by the beauty and abundance of Jackie that we didn't even get a chance to go over the previous week. So that's what happened.
That week I went and got my second COVID vaccine. So I did tell Walt, I think, off the air part of what happened. But it was sort of like one of those situations where everything that could go wrong went wrong. Because we're still here, we did fine. But 2 flat tires in the pouring rain on the way back, and then 15 hours for the tow truck to come, and then we thought the car was stolen. I mean, it was just like one thing after the other, and the whole time. And then I didn't have any symptoms from the second vaccine for like 35 hours. The technician, the doctor, whoever said, you will start to feel some symptoms in about 12 hours. Mm-hmm. And then 8 hours from then, you'll be fine. It'll be over.
Right.
Well, like 30 hours later, I hadn't had any symptoms. So I was like, well, but I didn't sleep for 40 hours. I just couldn't go to sleep. And then 45 hours after the shot, I got 48 hours worth of high fever. And the whole time I'm thinking I'm supposed to be focusing on everything that's beautiful.
Oh my god!
It definitely helped, because I kept joking about it. I was and something that was weird was that, and really fun to recognize vibrationally. I just emailed a client about this. Is that, when you wake up out of the blue one morning or in the night and you have a fever, it's like shocking and kind of scary. It's like, oh no, I'm getting sick. What's going on? My body's crappy. But when you get this shot and they tell you, okay, you're going to get a fever and chills, and that's just part of it working, and then it will be over. It's like, oh yeah, I had the fever. And it was so weird from just the normal experience of feeling ill, because it was like, whatever. Like, I had no emotional attachment to it, like fear or like what's happening or uncertainty. Yeah. It was just, oh yeah, this is supposed to happen. So it wasn't a big deal, but it was still, it's not fun, but it's still,
right.
It really made me realize how much our emotions and our stories and our worries affect us. Because I'm having the same symptoms I would normally have if I just got sick, but without all those emotions and stories attached to it, it just wasn't a big deal.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. It was like a totally different experience. I see Neo Positivity says, I had the same feeling after I got my shot. Yeah. Isn't that weird? It's just like, yeah, no big deal. And I'm thinking, if we could just have that, you know, story, that idea, every other time we feel something coming on.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, I often kind of do that. Sometimes I think to myself, well, this will pass. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, if I remember that time, Walt and I've talked about it so many times because it was a really cool experiment, but you get a head cold or something. Mm-hmm. I always try to tell myself, well, this is going to pass. Like, I'm not going to have a head cold for the next 40 years. I mean, it is gonna
pass. Right.
Just doing that seems like it just, like, takes the pressure off. Some of the symptoms don't seem as bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it just changes the vibration. So
there have been occasions where just by taking that attitude, the symptoms went away in like a half an hour.
Well, that one January when I was sick, oh my gosh, or I was trying, my body would kept trying to get sick, and I would feel my thoughts going down this pathway of like,
right.
Oh, I think I have to feel, I must be getting a cold. I feel like I have a fever. I think my throat hurts. And then I would focus on how I wanted to feel and start talking about it, you know, start talking about it. Like, no, I'm going to feel wonderful and full of energy. I want to feel better because I want my voice to be in good shape for the podcast today. And I would just start and the symptoms would just go away. And then when they came back, I would go through the same cycle. It's just like, you know, that automatic, oh no.
If we're good at that, we have those automatic processes built in there. But that's part of the reason why we learn to be conscious creators, so that we can get out of those old habits and change things around.
Yeah.
That's what's so cool.
That's what Dr. Joe Dispenza says. You are the placebo.
That's right.
Yes.
Which is really, really cool. So, and by the way, Neil mentioned that he also, he didn't manifest any symptoms, so he was pretty happy about that, too. Jeffrey's saying hello. So hello, Jeffrey, too.
My husband did not manifest any symptoms, but in solidarity with me, he did park himself on the sofa over the weekend.
There you go. I love it. That is great.
He did take very good care of me. I had my own personal, you know, valet there. He took great care of me. But
yeah, you got a good one when you got Scott, no doubt about that.
Yes, I did. Yes. I agree.
So I think it's time to move on to another experiment, because we're finding that these experiments are proving to be pretty good. I mean, pretty successful. Monique, I shared with you what my results were when I did what Deborah talked about, the observing of stuff for 48-hour period. So I didn't tell you. But in brief, in that 48-hour period, To my surprise, I only recorded 15 times where I discovered something that I was paying attention to that was good. I thought to myself, well, that's good, but geez, I could really do better than that.
Only 15.
As you recorded that many, so that means you probably saw three times as many.
Way more.
Probably did. Yeah, that's true.
Thing where they say, you know, if someone writes you a letter, either of praise or of complaint, you know, if you own a company and you get a complaint, that there's probably other people who feel the same praise or complaint who didn't write the letter.
Right.
So one person. So for every one thing you noticed.
There's a whole bunch of it. Yeah, that's true. There's the
echo. Exactly.
So anyway, I was pulling out the E-squared book, and we finished the first experiment. Well, actually, we haven't really reported on the first experiment. The first one in the book is actually our second one. And that's the one, Cindy, where you basically ask the universe to deliver something to show you that LOA works. And I don't know, we haven't gone off over that at all. I'm trying to remember. I know I had a couple things happen. I'm trying to remember what they were.
Me
I
too.
I thought we did talk about it, because I had asked for someone that I hadn't talked to in 10 or someone that I had not coached in 10 years to reach out to me.
Oh, that was the first experiment that we did. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. This is the one where you ask the universe to deliver something, but you don't specifically ask for what it is. You want the universe to provide the evidence.
I must have not been there when you did that.
Oh, right. Yes. You weren't here that day. That's right. Okay.
So I'll do it this week so we can really do it next time.
But I was trying to remember what, because I got a few things that came my way and I didn't write them down in that case. So I'm trying to remember what they were. Monique, did you do any tracking? Do you remember anything about what happened with that experiment?
Because we always should report on this. I do remember.
You do? Okay.
So let me jog your memory a little bit. You remember that I said, oh, you know what? I'm going to go all out and I'm going to tell the universe I want three things.
I remember that. That's right. Yes. Hey.
Yeah. So I actually got nothing. But I know why I didn't get anything.
Why?
Because from the moment I said that, Walt and Cindy, from the moment I said that, and I'm so embarrassed to even say this, but my mind started thinking, but what if I don't get one? But what if I don't get three? Oh my gosh, then I got to come back and tell them that I didn't get anything. And like that just kept playing over and over and over. Am I being greedy? Of course I'm not being greedy. I mean, all this stuff, right? And I got nothing. But I know it's because of the doubt in my mind. And it's so weird, you guys, because it's like one of the few times, like that's not the norm for me. So I don't even know why I even thought that.
Interesting is though, you know that saying that somebody says like worrying is like praying for what you don't want?
Yeah.
Well, doubt, you said it's like the doubt in my mind. Well, doubt is like focusing on
the thing that you don't want.
Right?
And that's what you manifest.
Yeah. So you did manifest something.
I manifested what I was thinking, which was nothing. Me getting nothing.
I have a question. You said you asked the universe for three things. And I remember I had told that story about asking for like two things and then adding a third that was just completely ridiculous.
Right, right.
Is that what you did or did you just pick three things? No, okay, you just picked
three. No, I was just like, God, I'm going to get three things. I'm waiting. And then I was like, but what if he doesn't give me one? Then I got to go back and say I didn't get anything. And then my mind just stuck. I don't even know.
So how do we frame that one since I haven't done it yet? Is that where we just ask for the universe to give us something that proves to us that
that nobody exists?
Yeah, okay. It was something random. You didn't have anything in mind, just something.
Okay.
That's the one that when I did this experiment, you know, 4 years ago, when you gave me the book, that's where on that same day I'd been interacting with people on Facebook about the numbers and then I get it was that one. Right.
But you know, Walt, now that you bring that up, I want to ask you guys, like I see angel numbers all the time, so much now that I don't even look them up anymore. At first, when it started happening, like in 2018, every time I saw 111 or 1111, I would race to go and say, well, what was I thinking? What does this mean? You know, but I see it so much now. It's like a natural occurrence now. Do you guys have that? Do you guys naturally or normally see a lot of angel numbers?
I'll tell you, the first time I even knew anything about it must have been back in maybe 2001. It was my mom, actually. My mom said to me, I see 444 everywhere. Wow. And she said, and she started giving me all these examples, not just like license plates, but like it pulled up behind another car and they were in traffic and she looked up in like the building, the number 444 or this 444, that 444. And I didn't know anything about numerology at the time. So we started looking into it. And we always, my sisters and I always just said, well, that's mom's number. That's her number. So it always reminded me of her. When she passed away, may she rest in peace. The number started, first I got an email from her computer and it was blank.
Ooh.
And so I called my stepdad and said, are you using mom's computer? And he said, no. And I said, because I got an email from her computer, but it was blank. And I think the time on it was like 444.
Oh, wow.
But then after that, one of us had to send the other one some pictures. And the camera downloaded the pictures and they were all numbered and they were all like 4440, 4441. which made no sense because the numbers previously were way less than that. So it just kept showing up, that number. So that was like my first experience. And then after that, had a lot of experiences with 1111, which you hear that one a lot. So my husband and I, whenever we have that experience where we look up and we see 1111 somewhere, we'll text the other one and say, make a wish. So we always do that. And then we got married on 1111.
Oh.
We chose that date specifically.
Oh, that's cute.
Because it was 2018, and 2018 reduces to 11. So 11, 11, 11. We just thought it was fun. But it happens to me a lot, and there are certain ones that I know what they are supposed to mean. Like 555 is supposed to mean like buckle your seatbelt, like the things you're manifesting are going to start coming out, right? And then it happens. So whenever I see that, I kind of chuckle about it. But yeah, I don't know. Walt, do you see them a lot or only when you're doing a Pam Grout experiment?
Well, yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I do see it a lot. I just never create the associations in my mind that most people do. It was never important to me to see. I was like, oh, isn't that fun? That's about the extent of it. I didn't give it any more importance than that. And so my position on repeated numbers and so forth has always been, well, it isn't so much what the official version is of what the number means. It's what it means to you. And your story was a great example of that, because there's probably some website out there or some authority who says what 444 is really all about. But 444 had a very specific meaning for you. That was not going to be true for everybody else. It would be very specific to your experience. That's what I mean when I say it really depends on what it means to you.
Right.
The meaningfulness is what you assign.
Whenever the official meaning is supposed to be angels are around you. And I know that because when my mom kept singing it, we started, you know, digging, and that's what we kept hearing people say is, oh, 444 means angels are around you. Well, my mom was dying of cancer, and it gave her a great deal of peace to allocate that meaning to that number, right? Mm-hmm. But when I see the number, I rarely think about angels around me. When I see the number now, I say, hi, Mom.
Yeah, there you go.
I love it. I love it.
So, yeah, you're right. It's like when it has a personal number meaning to you, it changes everything, you know.
It doesn't have to be numbers. We like numbers as human beings. I mean, hey, I was almost a math major. I probably should have been a math major because I was good at math. So, I mean, I like numbers a lot. And that's why I think we give a lot of attention to it. But it's almost anything that's important.
We
it's
like
whatever's important to you.
Things. That's what we like.
We do.
Right?
We do. Exactly.
It gets in trouble sometimes.
Yes. Well, it can be both. It can get us in trouble, or it can get us into joy. It can work either way.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Jeffrey says letting it be fun helps you to refocus on happiness as opposed to whatever program the mind is running. Yes, and that's exactly what I'm talking about adding meaning to things, right? One of my favorite questions to ask a client when a client comes to me with some story is, what are you making this mean about you? Because we always have a tendency to make mean something. And when we're, you know, down, we're making something mean something. It's just that when we can let go of that or give it some other meaning that's better and feels better. We have the power to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was what I was trying to convey in my thumb-fingered way on that day when I had the 555 during the experiment. Because when I was talking with people, the people were literally freaking out with, no, but I got 1, 2, 3, 4. What does that mean? I'm like, why are you freaking out? It's a number. That's all it is. Relax.
Yeah, it's just the same thing. I heard somebody talking one time about being asked how old you are, right? And you know how people will say age is just a number,
right?
Yep.
But sometimes we attach certain meanings to certain ages, certain numbers, right? And people, I've heard people say, oh, when I turned whatever age, you know, the next week, my eyes started not working properly. I started having arthritis. And I'm like, well, that was a program. Like, you know, we expect it at a certain time, and there it arrives to us because we expect it. So sometimes we give that kind of meaning to things.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I will even go so far as to say, I'm very proud to say, I've gotten to the point now where I have let go of a lot of stuff in my life. And now if I stumble upon something that I know I used to be attached to that I no longer am, it's a nice light feeling. It's a really good feeling. I'll give you an example of it. Now, this one I never really had an attachment on, but you could see where there would be one. Yesterday, of course, was my birthday. I turned 64. What do I say with the word 64? The old Beatles song. Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? Oh. Now, that's a feeling that isn't all that really great. Like, oh my God, I'm so clingy. I need to hang on to you. Are you going to be there for me when I'm older? Which is never an association that I had, you know, so I can kind of look at that one and say, yeah, haha, I like that one. That's kind of funny, you know, but I could also see it being, if it had been something that I had been hanging on to and I'd let go of, that would be a very common experience for me now. I have let go of so much stuff that stuff comes back and I say, oh, wow, I used to be so attached to that. I'm not anymore. So for me, a lot of these numbers and these symbols that come my way, it's more like, wow, here's something else to celebrate that I let go of.
Yeah, I think part of this, I mean, you know, there's that question, there's certain aptitude tests and personality tests that mm-hmm. have a question. There's like, do you always attach meaning to things? You know, and I'm like, yeah, it's like, guilty. I like to, you know, make meaning out of things. But being able to do what you're talking about there, where you can willingly let go, mm-hmm. if it's not right, is really powerful.
Yeah.
Well, especially when you have as much let go of as I had over the years. I mean, I'm still letting go of it. There's a stack that I let go of. There's this stack that's still yet to go.
Well, I was actually thinking about this, about how attached we get to things. And like Monique being like attached to the outcome of the experiment and then having that attachment start to cause. I mean, it's a really great thing to have happen, actually, because you can tell clients about this now, right? And because
right.
Seriously, I mean, it's an experience that you had where you're like, this is what happens when you get too attached to an outcome. Then your brain starts, you know, worrying about it.
Yeah, monkey brain. It's just all over the place. Just thinking about it.
Well, I was thinking about, I don't know if I've ever told this story on this podcast, but I actually, I remembered it last night and told it to someone, and I've been thinking about it all day. So I really want to share this story about letting go. Brenda says she sees 111 and 222 a lot. Yeah.
Nice. And so, what does it mean? Tell us what it means to you while Cindy's telling her story, Brenda. Give us a little detail about 111, 222, what it means.
So I had a Mercedes that I owned since it was a baby, and her name was Edna, and I loved her very much. I loved her very much. I had a lot of good memories of Edna. I just drove her till she had 160,000 miles on her. And then some things just started going wrong. And I was, you know, fixing them. And then something else would go wrong. You know, she was old. And my office looks out onto my carport. So she was sitting out there. Well, at the same time, I had gotten into this relationship with this wonderful man who I'm now married to. Oh. And I work from home. So I don't really go anywhere for work. And then whenever we would go somewhere, I was with him in his car, and he had a Mercedes too. And it was much newer than mine. Right. So sometimes I'd take his car, but my car was just sitting there and it wasn't running. And, you know, I washed it and stuff. I kept it clean, still very pretty, just didn't run. And at some point, like 2 years into her sitting out there, I just started noticing her every time I looked out the window. And I started, you know, for that whole 2 years, I just kept thinking, you know, I don't want to put any more money into her. I know I need to sell her. I need to put an ad on Craigslist or in the paper or something. But I was attached to her. I mean, she had a big meaning for me, right?
Sure.
And I was having trouble letting go. And so we're talking about letting go, right? I have an idea that I see over and over. Every big shift happens after a big letting go. And I just couldn't let go of her. And then at some point, like about 2 years, I'm sitting here and I'm looking out the window and it hits me, probably because of Jackie, if you're listening, Jackie, because Jackie knows all this stuff about feng shui. And it's really not good feng shui to have a dead car sitting in your driveway. It's not a good thing. It's a dead car. So that really bothered me for about a week. And I finally just, I was like, okay. And I said, universe, one morning I was just like, full of energy over it. I was all tangled up. I was like, okay, I've got to get this car out of here. Like, I'm not going to be able to manifest anything if I have a car in my carport. Like, this just doesn't work. So my husband came home to get me for lunch because we had a standing Friday lunch date. And he came in and he said, hey. And I said, hey. He said, what's the matter? I said, I have got to get rid of that car out there. And he said, well, are you hungry? You want to go to lunch? I said, no, I'm not going to lunch until we make a Craigslist ad or something like that car. Like, I'm not doing another thing. Like, I'm not going to be able to manifest anything ever again if I don't get rid of that car.
Ever again.
And he was like, oh, and he reaches out and hands me the slip of paper. And the slip of paper said, hi, my name is, I'm really interested in buying the E-Class Mercedes that's sitting in your carport. If you want to sell it, please call me. Here's my number. And I looked at my husband and I said, where did you get that? And he said, it was on your car. And I said, right now? He said, yeah, I just passed your car coming into the house and it was under the windshield wiper. So I call the guy and this is what he says to me. I said, hey, I got your note. I'm interested in selling the car to you. Now, here, remember, my car hadn't started, right? Right. It was
2 years.
I said, I'm interested in selling it. And he said, oh, I'm so glad you're interested in selling it. I've been driving by it every day for 2 years, and I finally got the nerve to leave a note. I've been driving by, looking at it, wanting it for 2 years, and I finally got the nerve to leave the note. I was like, oh, you got the nerve to leave the note the day I let go of the thing.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he comes over. It starts.
No way!
He test drives it. I said, look, it needs a battery. He comes back the next morning with cash, with a new battery, pops it in the car. My husband's a notary, notarizes all this stuff right out there in the driveway, and the guy drives away. So I sold my car, had cash money in my hand. The car didn't have to be towed. The car was driven away within 24 hours of the time I said, okay, I am done with this. I am ready. Car has got to go. Universe, do your thing. Like, I'm ready. I'm letting you.
What a great story.
Yes, that's an amazing story. I love it.
Wow. I mean, how often do we get that level of detail in terms of recollecting how stuff showed up? I loved you got that, all that detail. I mean, it was like it was handed to you with this bow on top because it's beautifully constructed.
It was like, wow. And I hadn't thought of it in a long time. And it happened a few years back. And I was just like, so blown away. If you've ever seen the movie, the first movie, Wonder Woman movie with Gal Gadot in it, mm-hmm. There's a scene where she finally like really uses her power. And in that scene, she's just overtaken with emotion. And I can't remember if it was rage or frustration or what, but it's just like, you know, and the power comes upon her and bursts out of her. That's what I recognized when this happened. There was so much energy, right? There was so much focus. Like I said to my husband, no, I'm not going to lunch until we do like this. And I was ready. That's the thing though. I was ready. I was ready to let go of her. I wasn't ready the year before.
Right.
And poor Melvin that had been driving around past it for 2 years longing for
going. Right?
But that's the part that was just mind-blowing is that he said, I've been wanting to reach out. I finally got up the nerve. I was like, oh, I'm so sorry.
That is amazing. Wow. Well, Jeffrey raised a question. He actually raised it before you told the story, but it's in the context of what we're talking about, so I'll throw it up on screen here. He says, is this way of thinking different from goal-oriented thinking?
I don't know how to answer that question. I mean, I am very process oriented, not goal oriented. Mm-hmm. I have a tendency to do much better in manifesting if I focus on the process and not the outcome. And that might not be the case for other people.
Right.
Right?
What do you mean by the process too? Let's be specific about that. Because I could see myself thinking the process is trying to figure out how this whole thing's going to happen.
So like I'm an artist. And if I'm painting, okay, here's an even better description because I was going to say if I'm painting, I'm not really concerned about what it's going to look like when it's finished. I'm just in the process. Mm-hmm. But another one is like I'm a knitter. And I tell people all the time, it just hit me actually yesterday how process oriented I am. I tell people, oh, I love to knit. It's so meditative.
Ah.
I don't say, oh, I love to knit. You should see my collection of sweaters.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the outcome. Like half the time I knit something, I give it away as a gift, but it's the process. And that's not the same for everybody. It's the same with me, like affirmations. I will change an affirmation. I will change it and change it and change it. Why? Because I need to have that change going on. It's part of the process. Other people can read the same affirmation word for word every single day and they manifest that thing just like that. So I don't know if this is a different way of thinking from being goal oriented. But I knew it was something that I had to let go of. And that's different than having a goal of, you know, replacing it or something. Like, I need a new car. That's my goal. We got to get rid of this one. You know, that wasn't anything at all. It was just, so I don't know. It's a great question. What do you guys think when you hear that question?
What do you think, Monique?
Well, I was just thinking, kind of like you, I wasn't really sure how to answer the question, but, you know, I never really stopped to think about, I guess, how I manifest until you said you're very process oriented. And when I think about me, last year when I manifested leaving corporate America and I said, you know, I'm going to have my own coaching business and I'm moving to Miami. Oh, and this is going to happen in 3 months, right? I didn't necessarily focus on the end because in my mind, it was never not going to happen. It was going to happen. But my thing was now I was just focused on, okay, what's the next steps? What do I need to do? How do I work hand in hand with the universe to make this manifestation happen? So I guess kind of like you, Cindy, I'm a little bit more
process oriented too.
I don't envision
the outcome.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, you had an outcome that you were looking to.
Yeah.
Of course, like, you know, even in the example I gave with painting a painting and even the car, what was my outcome? Well, it was to have the car gone. I wanted the car.
Right. Not getting a new car.
But, you know, so I don't know. It's a great question and it's good to know about yourself, right? If you can look back, you can look back at things you have manifested successfully, consciously manifested.
Yeah.
Look at where was I focused? Was I completely focused on the outcome or was I in the process? Or, you know, I think it's going to be different for everybody.
And I think there's also a third opportunity, a third possibility there. And it's that possibility is the reason why I tend to avoid goal orientation at all. That possibility is that I will be focused on the goal, not making it, not being achieved.
Well,
yeah.
That's what you were talking about earlier, right? It's like thinking, what if I don't get anything?
What if I don't get it?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the thing with goal orientation. The way goal oriented thinking is often taught, it becomes almost obsessive, which isn't really what you want to do. You want to be vibrational. You want to be in that high vibe space. You don't want to be obsessing about something.
You know, my earliest mentor added a phrase to me and it was, this is equivalent or whatever would be better, right? Like when you make a goal, like this, it's equivalent or whatever would be better. And the caveat too was that it's not better. Like sometimes people want a certain thing. They want a certain job and they manifest a job that they don't think they want as much. And then they say, well, I guess maybe this is better. Maybe God knows what's better. And, you know, it's actually better, but they don't really feel like it's better. They want to do everything. And, you know, he used to say, no, when you say whatever would be better, you're going to know it's better. Like,
I agree.
I could imagine, right? So, I think that's kind of an important part of the process. If we get so focused specifically on a certain thing, for some people, that manifesting style may be perfect and they manifest that thing. But for other people, it may cause attachment. And when attachment happens, it's not going to be coming, right? So saying, well, this is equivalent or whatever would be better, sort of releases that attachment to that specific because it's like, hey, maybe even something better.
Yeah.
Or something that I don't know about yet. That's why I like this intention that you're talking about that I didn't do yet, or I have done it with the owl, but with just saying I want this thing in 24 hours because I can't be attached to it because I don't know what it is.
Right.
Maybe that was what you got attached to. Three. Right? Mm. because it was an indistinct thing you were asking for. So I mean, how can I get attached to it when I'm not sure what's coming?
That's the point. I think that's one of the reasons why Pam structured that particular experiment the way she did. Yeah. For the exact reason.
If I'm attached to three things, three indistinct, then I've got a number and I can be attached to that.
Yeah. And I was totally focused on the three.
So you did it very well, I might say. I said you did it very well. You attached beautifully to that number three.
And it's so crazy, you guys, because I don't even know. Just in what you're talking about, Cindy, it makes total sense now when we're talking about how do you manifest. I normally manifest by process, not by the goal. But in this instance, I was so focused on the goal that I needed to get the three. I needed to get the three. I needed to get the three, right? Interesting.
So yeah. I got a couple more things to share here. First of all, Luke, when he heard your story, oh my goodness, what a story. I agree with him entirely.
Yeah. That's a
fabulous story. Oh, so cool. And then Brenda came back to tell us more about what the numbers mean to her. She says, It's not just those two sets of numbers. It's just the three same numbers in a row. It doesn't have a meaning other than, huh, interesting. What does that mean? And I agree with her. That's exactly what it is for me too. Yeah. I mean, I know that there are, you know, official sources that tell you what it means, but I don't need them. I just needed to know, oh, that's so cool.
I read cards, right? I read playing cards. I read tarot cards. I read Lenormand. I read cards, any kind of cards. And somebody recently in a group I'm in, not a card reading group, just another group, had focused about seeing 444. And 4-4. And 4. Just kept seeing 4, like everywhere. Mm-hmm. And said, you know, and I think somebody had told them it means, you know, it's an angel number, whatever. But they said, well, I don't just see 444. I see 4-4, or I just see 4, but I keep seeing 4s everywhere. And does anybody else have any? I said, well, have you looked into the meaning, like in the tarot, 4s are there. It's a number like a 4, like 4 legs on a table, structure, foundation, solidity, something being stable. Even in playing card reading, same thing. It's something that doesn't change. It's something that is stable and it has a foundation to it. So, you know, sometimes if I was seeing a number constantly like that, I would go try to figure out, you know, what significance that number has just in any other place, right? Because I don't know, there's sometimes when things happen like that where it kind of feels like the universe is trying to get your attention, point you somewhere, you know? And so I don't know.
Well, like I told everybody starting off the podcast, yesterday I celebrated my birthday on the 4th of May. So the obvious thing to say is may the 4s be with you.
Yeah. Right. I told you I wasn't going to say that to you because you're going to get it. I started to type it. I was like, yeah, no.
But you got to do it. I mean, I've had that one ever since Star Wars came out. So that's been part of my life. But that's okay. It's no big deal. Yeah. Well, actually, I share that with a former co-host.
Really? Shelley
Epperly is a former co-host, and she's also May 4th. So, yeah, which is pretty cool.
Wow.
So there's two of us.
No way.
Cool. Yeah. Very, very, very cool. So we actually have been going off on a really great tangent here, but I'm wondering, should we actually get back to the Pam Grout experiment?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Yeah.
I mean, this is all good stuff. I don't want to, you know, make it sound like it's not, because it is, but, you know, we do have a good experiment to do here. And this is a fun one. She calls this one, this is experiment number 2 in the E Squared book, for those who are reading from the same hymnal at home. it's called the Volkswagen Jetta Principle, subtitled, You Impact the Field and Draw from It According to Your Beliefs and Expectations. And then there's a quote from, I love this name, Lemony Snicket, in a series of unfortunate events. Miracles are like pimples, because once you start looking for them, you find more than you ever dreamed you'd see.
That's true.
It's annoyingly true, right? So the premise is that what shows up in our lives is a direct reflection of our inner thoughts and emotions. She says, my friend Linda told me an amazing story about a young woman she once observed at the airport. This poor young thing was struggling with 3 heavy bags, but worse than the unwieldiness of her baggage was her less than positive attitude. With great gusto, she was vocalizing her immense disgust at a lack of help. Why, she kept shouting, is the bus taking so long? Where in the hell is that bus? This is completely unacceptable. Now, Linda said she might have felt sorry for the girl, except that the very bus she was criticizing was 5 feet in front of her with its door wide open. Twice the bus circled, each time stopped to pick up passengers, but the irate young woman could not see it. The bus, thanks to her intense commitment to struggle and anger, was literally out of her energetic sphere. That's why I named this principle after a popular model of car. Once a new model or make or brand enters your sphere of awareness, you suddenly notice it everywhere. And that's what happens when we devote our minds to things we do not want. Lack, unhappiness, danger are no more prevalent than a Volkswagen Jetta. But once we bring them into our consciousness, they sadly take over. According to physicists, there's a zero-point field, what I call the field of potentiality, or the FP, where every possibility exists.
Yeah.
For example, there's the possibility you could be a ballerina. Another, that you could be a U.S. senator. Still another possibility is being a bag lady in Haight-Ashbury. When it comes to the FP, the possibilities are infinite. Now, since I'm not a physicist and can barely pronounce the name David Bohm, let alone understand his theory of layered realities, I prefer to think of the field as a gigantic Walmart with hundreds of thousands of products or possibilities. This is probably a good time to mention I'm not a fan of Walmart. That I've never quite been able to forgive the corporate giant for running my favorite corner pharmacy and fabric store out of business. But as a single mom on a budget, I do occasionally lower myself to shop there. And when I do, I know just where to find the fabric, the puzzles, the kids' shoes, all the things I've been known to purchase. But I'm completely oblivious to most of the hundreds of thousands of products on the shelves. Why? Well, because they're not what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean they're not there. It doesn't mean they're not as real as the puzzles and shoes. It just means I'm not aware of them. For example, my daughter once came home from school with head lice. After panicking and briefly considering throwing myself off the nearest bridge, I finally concluded I would provide a much better parental example by going in search of lice shampoo. Sure enough, on an aisle of Walmart I'd walked down dozens, probably hundreds of times, was a complete selection of lice shampoo. Why had I never noticed it before? Because it wasn't what I was looking for. Quote from A Course in Miracles, your wildest misperceptions, your weird imaginings, your blackest nightmares, all mean nothing.
Oof, that's so good.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
A few years ago, a sweepstakes agency gave away 100 free trips to anywhere winners wanted to go. That meant lucky winners could fly to Paris to see the Eiffel Tower, or jet to Australia and climb Irish Rock, or lounge on a beach in the Caribbean islands. And you know what? 95% of the winners picked the destination within 4 hours of their home. That pretty much sums up the human condition. So much is out there, but most of us choose to stay within 4 hours of our comfort zones. We refuse to budge, even when there's ample evidence we're missing out on big things. Wow. Without being truly conscious of it, we spend the lion's share of our waking hours immersed in the comfort zone of negativity. The pull of the negative is so strong that many of us navigate our entire days jumping from one depressing thought to another. I overslept again. This war is unconscionable. The economy's in shambles. Gas is expensive. My boss or my kid or my fill-in-the-blank is driving me crazy. Negativity and fear start the minute we're born. It's a scary world out there, Jimmy. Don't you dare talk to strangers. Don't you dare sing that silly song at the grocery store. Someone might hear. We learn to limit. We learn to believe in scarcity. We learn that our natural inclination to love and to create and to dance is impractical and crazy. Our parents think it's their sworn duty to teach us to be careful, to be responsible, to act like adults. And if for some reason we're lucky enough to get parents who don't dispense these lessons, our culture quickly indoctrinates us into believing that collecting material things is our purpose in life and that the only way to get those goodies is to put our proverbial noses to the grindstone. And by the time we're in grade school, we're already masters at competition, old pros at living in scarcity and fear. But guess what? It's all a big ruse, a bad habit. As A Course in Miracles clearly states, once you develop a thought system of any kind, you live by it and teach it. Once you form a belief, you attach all of your senses and your life to its survival.
Ooh.
Like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. Physicists call this phenomenon collapse of the wave. infinite numbers of quantum particles are out in the universal field dancing around, spreading out in waves. The moment someone looks at these energy fields, they solidify like gelatin in the refrigerator. Your observing is what makes them appear solid, real material. Remember in Disney's Snow White when she's lying on the forest floor crying? She feels as if all these eyes are staring at her. And indeed, dozens of forest creatures are skittering and scampering about. But the moment she raises her head to look, all the cute little birds, squirrels, and deer dive behind trees. And all she can see is a solid, unmoving forest. In reality, our universe is a moving, scampering energy field with infinite possibilities. But because our eyes have locked in on problem mode, that's what appears to be reality.
That is good stuff. Such good stuff. Good.
Yeah.
Stuff. Isn't that good?
Focus. Yeah.
This book is fabulous. I mean, and she goes on. I mean, we don't have time to read the whole thing because we'd use up all the time of the show to read the whole of it. But I do want to get to the experimental part. So let me skip ahead. And let's see. So the method that we're practicing is everything we think we're seeing is all just a guess, a prediction our brains are making, according to Kurt Anderson, author of True Believers. And so let's see. Pam says, for the next 48 hours, that's all, a pain-free two-day commitment. You are free to go back to your miserable life as soon as this experiment is over. You are going to actively look for certain things. And just like sixth graders who start out dissecting worms, not human bodies, you're going to begin with something simple. Green cars. Or if you insist, pick another car. Another color, rather. Sunset beige, for example. For the first 24 hours of the experiment, you're going to make the following conscious intention. I hereby intend for the next day of my life to look for, well, okay, you win, sun beige vehicles. Again, nothing special is required. Just keep your eyes open and make the intention. And then simply notice if your conscious awareness has made a difference in the number of sunset beige cars you see. On day two, during the second 24-hour period, you're going to make the intention to find yellow butterflies or purple feathers or whatever. Just make the intention. My friend Jeanette tried the experiment in January in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, found yellow butterflies on stationery and on a paper cup at her daughter's friend's birthday party. Another friend, Angela, was reading The Secret on a plane. This popular book on the universal law of attraction suggested that readers make an intention to receive a free cup of coffee. She laughed because, after all, the onboard flight attendant was just 2 aisles away from asking her that important flight attendant question, coffee, tea, or soda. Now, that isn't quite fair, she noted, making the intention moving on to the next paragraph. But during her layover, a stranger who was sitting near her in the waiting lounge leaned over and said, my flight was just called. I can't carry anything else. I haven't even taken a sip. Do you want this? You guessed it. It was just, it was a just brewed Starbucks latte.
Yeah, I want it. Bye, have a good trip. Thanks.
So that's a good experiment. It's a nice, easy experiment.
Yeah.
And it's another one of those where you're not really asking for one specific thing to show up that's going to benefit you directly in some huge way. You're asking for more evidence that LOA works.
I think that's why these experiments are so good, because we don't really get attached.
Right.
Yeah. Right. It's like you just said, it's not that we're focusing on something that's going to like radically change our life. Although it might, you know, energetically in the moment, because, wow, we start noticing. But, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, going back to the previous experiment, I mean, you already know the story from a few years back about, you know, the numbers that I had been hearing about all day long. And then as I started the experiment, I saw 555 on my phone. Well, we were doing the same experiment over the last week or so. And within 48 hours of me initiating the experiment for myself, what I got this time was a couple things. And I was trying to remember what they were. I mentioned at the beginning of the show that I couldn't remember. I remember what one of them is now. I got an idea on a money-making venture. And this is something I've been looking for quite some time. But in this particular case, it was something that had been sitting in front of my nose for months. Kind of like the lady with the bus.
Right.
And in fact, it's not just been sitting in front of my nose. It's actually been sitting in the front of the noses of virtually every human being on the planet. But none of us have really noticed it. And I noticed it. I'm thinking, why hasn't anybody noticed this? Now, this thing is so shocking to me. It's very simple, actually, but it's so shocking to me. I'm not even ready to reveal it just yet. I actually have to go see if it actually works because I have that kind of mentality going on here. So I'm in the process of doing that right now. So I can't give you the full report, but I will give you a full report when I have a full report to report.
Okay.
So just wanted to let you know there is that going on. Anyway, with this particular experiment, so like Cindy has told us in the past, she actually has lab report sheets, and the lab report sheet reads as follows. The principle is the Volkswagen Jetta principle. The theory, you impact the field and draw from it according to your beliefs and expectations. The question to be asked, do I really see only what I expect to see? And the hypothesis is if I decide to look for sunset beige cars and butterflies or purple feathers, I will find them. Time required is 48 hours, and we write the date and time. And the approach is, according to this crazy Pam Grout girl, the world out there reflects what I want to see. She says that it's nothing but my own illusions that keep me from experiencing peace, joy, and love. So even though I suspect she's cracked, today I'm going to look for my sunset beige cars, and tomorrow I'll go butterfly hunting. And then there's blanks for number of sunset beige cars observed and number of butterflies observed, and then blank for research notes. So that's the official form. I guess we can also pick what it is we're going to look for in this case. I mean, she gave examples, but we get to decide what we're going to attract.
Oh, yay. Pick with the green cars and the yellow butterflies.
Okay.
You know, what's funny is that in my own personal belief system here, sunset beige cars seem a lot more frequent than green cars. And right. So I was like, no, I'm going to stay with green cars. We'll see if they show up. It doesn't seem to be a whole lot of green cars. So we'll see. This should be fun.
So it's stretching the edge is what you're doing. Yeah. You're stretching the belief system.
Right. Yeah.
Actually, it's a stretch for me too, because lately I've been doing so much work inside. I don't get out to see cars very often. So this is going to be a challenge too, from that perspective.
Well, I actually, my office window is looking right out to where there will be traffic, but that's the idea I had, is that, you know, most of the time they're going to have to drive here and see, you know, running all over town looking for a green car. So we'll see what happens. It's a pretty good experiment. What about you, Monique? You're going to think of something different or stick with the green cars and the yellow butterflies or purple feathers?
I was thinking about a different car, my favorite car that I rarely see.
Okay.
And that's it can be a 2020 or a 2021. I don't think the body style changed that much for me to know the difference, really. But it's the car that I want. So, it's a black on black. Infiniti Q60. They're a two-door little sports car that I love. I rarely see them, and I definitely rarely see them in black.
Okay, well, this will be good then.
Okay. Yeah,
this will be good.
I'm going to go for...
stick with the yellow butterfly for the... I can't even remember the last time I've seen the yellow butterfly.
I know, right? I had that thought too. And I know it wasn't a yellow one.
But, of course, you're the one who saw the owl in the middle of Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Right.
Flying up the side of your building. So, you know.
A wingspan of, like, 6 feet. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah. So we'll see if we can see some yellow butterflies.
I'm going to go for a, not a sunset beige, but a beige color that's very similar to the color of the last two cars that I had. Right now, we're sharing a car, Louise and I are, but I like that particular color. So I'm not going to look for the same model. The model is a Toyota Camry, and I've kind of gone off Camrys a little bit just because I don't like the way they've changed the styling around. But I'm just going to look for beige color cars right now. And if I want to really stretch it a little bit, I'm going to play it safe, and I'm also going to stretch it. I'm going to do both. That way I feel like I win either way. So I'm going to look for the beige cars, but I'm also going to make my second thing. I want to see a beige Tesla. And I'm saying that because I have never seen a beige Tesla.
Never.
Ever. So no. I'm going to go for the gusto on that one, but I'm going to have a safe zone.
You'll already be focused on beige cars, so then that will
revenue. That's right.
Tesla.
Well, it's a way of stretching the edge a little bit, right? Okay, so I know I can get to the beige car. Let's see if I can get the beige Tesla too.
Exactly. Yeah, that is.
Yeah, that's good. That's kind of fun. This will give me reason to be outside looking for butterflies.
Exactly. Yeah, now we have a reason to go outside. Another good thing. Another vibration raiser.
Yeah, and I have a nail appointment after this, so I'm going to see if I see my car.
Well, all right, there you go. So good stuff.
That'd be so great if it was just parked at the nail salon.
Oh, that'd be great.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
A little sign that it says for sale. Anyway, just wanted to thank everybody who was contributing to the live stream. And by the way, if you have more stories to tell, send them in by email or to use the Elevate Today app to send them in, or send, if you have questions for Cindy and Monique to answer, by all means, send those in too. But thank you, ladies, and look forward to checking the results with you next week.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you, especially to our podcast listeners. And we will see you all next time here on Elevate Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.